Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Dr. Trita Parsi, who is the co-founder and president of the National Iranian American Council and author of Treacherous Alliance, The Secret Dealings of Iran, Israel, and the United States, and A Single Roll of the Dice, Obama's Diplomacy with Iran. He has an article at opendemocracy.net, The U.S. and Iran on a Dead-End Path to War. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. Trita Parsi.
Thank you so much for having me again.
And President Obama spoke at the UN today and said that the U.S. Would do what we must to stop Iran getting nuclear weapons. And yesterday, Ahmadinejad called Israel a fake regime that would be eliminated. He will speak again tomorrow. And, of course, we know that the Secretary General of the United Nations has asked speakers to tone down their rhetoric. However, I suspect that there'll be some incendiary rhetoric from Ahmadinejad tomorrow.
It would be shocking if there wasn't, unfortunately.
So here you have this reciprocity of sable rattling and bluster and bravado. Yesterday I spoke with Barbara Crosset, a veteran New York Times reporter covered the UN. She was at the meeting that Ahmadinejad had with a group of American academics, and she said he was going on about sort of vainglorious talks about the Persian Empire and all this stuff. I mean, what's your understanding of because my understanding is that these sanctions are really biting at home and that the Iranian people are suffering. So I'm just trying to get an understanding of the disconnect between what's happening at home and the idea that he's on the world stage talking in grandiose terms.
No, the sanctions are really hurting the Iranian people and the Iranian economy. I think the Iranian economy is in shatters. Much of it is because of sanctions. Much of it is also because of incompetence and mismanagement of the economy by the government itself. Part of the reason why I'm very skeptical about the sanctions, though, is because as much as the economy is in shadows and the Iranian people are suffering, Ahmadinejad doesn't seem to be terribly bothered by it. And most importantly, the nuclear calculus of the Iranian government has not shifted a bit as a result of all of this pressure. And that's part of the reason I'm personally quite skeptical that a pressure-centric, a sanction-centric policy really can yield positive results.
So let's talk about your article that is at opendemocracy.net, The U.S. and Iran on a Dead-End Path to War. You're saying that there are three ways war between the United States and Iran can begin. Just walk us through that, if you could.
Yeah, if you simplify it, I think that there's approximately three different ways in which war between the United States and Iran, or Israel and Iran, could begin. And the first and obvious one is that either one of these three governments would make a decision to start a war. That the President of the United States would push the button, that the Israeli Prime Minister would do something, or that the Iranians would do something to start a war. The U.S. intelligence puts the risk of the Iranians deliberately starting a war very low. I personally don't believe that there's a high likelihood of the Israelis doing something in spite of all the rhetoric coming out of Netanyahu. I think that's more of a bluff. So far, it has been a bluff, and I think it's more likely to be a bluff going forward as well. I'm also quite convinced that the Obama administration has no interest in a military confrontation with the Iranians. U.S. military, for certain, is very much against it. And as a result, I think the first path to war, meaning a deliberate decision, is at this stage not particularly likely. Then you have, secondly, the risk of a war as a result of some sort of an incident or accident in the Persian Gulf between the U.S. and the Iranian Navy. We've seen some incidents in the past, and the U.S. military is quite concerned because we have very few de-escalatory mechanisms in place that can ensure that such an incident would not spark a larger war in the region, that it wouldn't get out of control. The risk of that is unpredictable, but it is not necessarily too small. The biggest risk, however, is the one risk that we're not talking about, the one risk that we're paying the least attention to. And that is that this pressure-centric approach that both sides are pursuing, in which they have a dual-track policy, one in which they talk to each other But at the same time as they are negotiating, they're really putting much of their emphasis on increasing the pressure on the other side. And so far we have seen that every time one side escalates, the other one also escalates. And the danger with this is that it's extremely difficult to get out of this dynamic. And as a result, as the escalatory options become less and less and more dangerous, at some point there's a high likelihood that the next escalatory step actually will spark a war between the two sides. It wouldn't be as much a deliberate decision to go to war, but rather that through these escalations, the situation will become so tense that it will become politically impossible to pursue any other path than continued escalation and pressure, which then eventually leads to open warfare. That's the biggest risk of war. We're essentially on a trajectory towards this type of a confrontation. I would say that the dual-track policy is a one-way street towards a confrontation. But because it's not as fast, because it doesn't appear as if we're on that path, because we believe that we're doing this pressure in order to avoid the war, we are kind of blinded by the reality that the direction that we're all heading is a gravitation towards a confrontation.
Well, Trita Parsi, you said that the United States and Iran are talking to each other. It seems that they talk past each other. And one of the things that I've always found extraordinary about the axis of evil, the David Frum phrase that became the kind of centerpiece of Bush's foreign policy, is that if you look at the three countries of the axis of evil, Iraq, Iran, and North Korea, the one thing that's pretty clear about all three countries is the United States is absolutely blind in these countries. They have no diplomatic relations. And that means you don't have anybody on the ground there really finding out what's going on. You can entirely rely on overheads from satellites and from third-party intelligence, which is often unreliable. Mike Mullen, the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs, said back in September 2011 that we've had no connection with Iran since 1979. Even in the darkest days of the Cold War, we had links to the Soviet Union. We are not talking to Iran, so we don't understand each other. If something happens, it's virtually assured that we won't get it right and that there will be miscalculation, which would be extremely dangerous in that part of the world. So don't you think that this absurd idea that we have in our diplomacy, that we'll only talk to you if you reward us by doing what we want you to do, hasn't it blinded us? We were blind going into Iraq, obviously.
Certainly the diplomacy that has taken place so far is inadequate. And I would say also that the approach to it has been highly problematic because, as I mentioned earlier on, the policy is dual track, meaning that we're doing sanctions and diplomacy at the same time. The Iranians also have a dual track policy. They talk, but at the same time, they're escalating their nuclear program. They're advancing it further. They do so primarily to put pressure on the West to essentially present the West with a fait accompli. And the West imposes more sanctions because of the belief that at some point the Iranians are going to break under all of this pressure, not realizing that for every escalatory step the West has taken, the Iranians have actually advanced their nuclear program and done exactly the things that the West would like it to cease to do, and vice versa. So this diplomacy certainly doesn't seem to qualify for what we think diplomacy should be, what the people's impression are. In these last rounds of talks, unfortunately, there were no clear indications of willingness for compromise. Particularly, the Iranians did indicate that they're willing to stop 20% enriched uranium, but from the U.S. side, there was no political readiness to engage in any sanctions relief, which is what the Iranians seem to be looking for. We'll see if after the elections, if there still is a president that is interested in diplomacy, if that president then will have the political space and maneuverability to engage in diplomacy in the manner that is necessary in order for it to yield any results.
So again, I'm speaking with Dr. Trita Parsi, who's the co-founder and president of the National Iranian American Council, and he's the author of his latest book is A Single Roll of the Dice, Obama's Diplomacy with Iran. And he has an article at opendemocracy.net, The U.S. and Iran on a Dead End Path to War. Now, recently, a very stellar group of national security luminaries signed a report by the Iran Project, which was a cost-benefit analysis of a war with what a war with Iraq would with Iran would involve, with former national security advisors Zbigniew Brzezinski, Brent Scowcroft, Tom Pickering, etc., former chairman of the Fed Paul Volcker. My understanding is that one of the things that concerns some of these people is that that Netanyahu may have come to the conclusion that Obama, in spite of his efforts on through his biggest donor Sheldon Adelson to keep Romney going, and you know, I'm not sure exactly how close their friendship is, although this apparently goes back some time. But there's this notion, perhaps, that Netanyahu's come to the conclusion that Obama's going to win, and he's be stuck with him, so he might as well co-opt him by dragging him into a war just before the elections, which would give him an electoral boost. Because, as you know, we go crazy when there's a war on, and the cable news even has their own theme songs, like they did for the Iraq War. And the whole country loses its mind and gets wrapped up in war fever, and that'll put Obama over the top, and therefore the Israelis will own him, and he'll be stuck with their ridiculous policy. Does that make any sense to you, that scenario?
I personally don't find it very likely that the Israelis would do something. Certainly, making the threat of taking military action does yield some benefits, but I would be very shocked if they were to do it. And I do understand the calculation that if they feel that they're stuck with Obama anyways, they might as well start something now. But that kind of disregards the tremendous opposition to military strikes that would be unilateral by the Israelis themselves from within the Israeli defense establishment, both amongst the military as well as in the intelligence. There's a tremendous amount of opposition to the idea that Israel would go it alone. It's a completely different thing if you ask them if they would like to see the U.S. take military action. But if Netanyahu does take action right now, he would be on his own. He would do it in spite of very strong messages from the United States that the U.S. does not wish to see Israel do this. And as a result, he would risk permanently damaging the most important relationship that Israel has, and that's the relationship he has with the United States.
And I don't understand, in terms of that scenario, how you could corral the U.S. into it, because it's likely if the Israelis were to attack, surely the Iranians would just ride out the attack, wouldn't they? Wouldn't it be better for them to be the victims? But if the U.S. got involved, then it could get serious, and the Straits of Hormuz could be closed, and then you'd have a global recession, could lead to a depression.
Absolutely, and that's the key thing. The likely repercussions of a war are very, very difficult to predict, and as a result, it's very difficult for Netanyahu to make such a decision when he has so little support for it politically at home. That's why I say that I think it's more likely that he's threatening and he's bluffing right now, hoping that he will yield as much, drag as much benefits as possible from the U.S. by making these threats. But the likelihood that he will actually actualize the threats, sure, I think, is relatively small.
But still, just back to your article, the U.S. and Iran on a dead-end path to war. We're talking about this as though it's insane, but you're saying it's actually quite likely. And they're on a path.
I think it's quite likely, and you know, there's a question mark in the title.
Yeah, I understand.
So it's a question that is being asked, but I do believe that it's very likely, unless we have the type of robust diplomacy that is necessary, that has succeeded elsewhere, then we are on a trajectory towards war. The status quo is not motionless. The status quo is a gravitation towards war.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Dr. Tridipassi.
Thank you so much for having me.
Again, Dr. Tridipassi is co-founder and president of the National Iranian American Council and author of Treacherous Alliance, The Secret Dealings of Iran, Israel, and the United States, and A Single Roll of the Dice, Obama's Diplomacy with Iran. He has an article at opendemocracy.net, The U.S. and Iran on a Dead-End Path to War. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back in tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.